All righty, well, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here today for our board workshop and then followed by the board meeting. We will kick off, as always, with the board workshop, and I know we're always excited about every topic that we're going to get to hear about and learn about, but I think today is an even more special day with a topic that's just so exciting and so important to both our community and to think about to the nation. So excited that we can have the meeting here today in the shadow of the amazing statue. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Labasso to introduce our speakers.
Great. Well, thank you. And couldn't miss an opportunity to have a board meeting here to get to see this beautiful statue in person. I mean, if you, the pictures do not do it any justice. So we're really pleased to be able to have this. And with that, I'm going to introduce Nancy Homan. Loman, is it Homan? No, that's not Homan. That's what I'm reading. But Nancy Loman is here, and some students who will do some readings. The students that are here today is Jaslyn Whitten and Gabriel Haynes, right there. So we will have them up there. But we've worked with Nancy on this project when I got a phone call from Bob saying, hey, Tom, what do you think about hosting the statue at New Journal Center? And so we said, sure, let's bring in some other sponsors and make it happen. So so thank you for putting that call in, and Nancy, thank you for your leadership in bringing this amazing statue here and allowing us to be a host. So with that, Nancy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. This presentation was actually created by myself and Bob Lloyd, but you get to hear from him at your board meetings often, I'm sure, and so he gave me the floor today. So, but it really is a presentation that both Bob and I created. And so Bob serves as secretary, really unofficially the co-chair, vice chair of the statutory board. He was the chair of the statutory board, and then his plate overfloweth, and he asked me to take over as chair a year or so ago. So it's been my honor and pleasure to be both the president of the statutory fund and working with Bob Lloyd and him. So thank you, Bob. And really, the stars of the show are yet to come. We worked together on Sunday at your program here. It was just fantastic. So thanks for all of your support at Daytona State College. The reason we're here today is because of the leadership of all of you, particularly President Labasso, when Bob came up with this idea of asking all of you to consider hosting this magnificent statue here. I always remind President Labasso that the most important words he said is, yes, if we can co-host it with the Cook University and the City of Daytona, Volusia County, and all the others here in the city, so that it's a shared project and a collaborative project. And that's what Mary McLeod Within was all about, was collaboration and moving things forward, things like social justice and civil rights and jobs for African Americans and women. All of those initiatives she moved forward with firmness and kindness, and that's what all of you do as well. So I'm going to give you some background. I'm talking a little bit quickly because some of this you know, some of you don't know. Bob knows all of this, like the back of his hand. So to the degree that I say things that you already know, I apologize, but I wanted to kind of give you the start and finish for how we got right here today. And right here today was no easy feat, by the way, because that statue is 3 tons, 6,037 pounds. And so my hat is off to two people in particular for making this physically happen, and that is Chris Wainwright. Thank you so much for all of your stewardship and leadership, and Carolyn Nealon, your events manager, who has really been amazing in coordinating the public visitations as well as the private events. So just a little bit of background. Most of you know this. It's a great trivia question for a lot of people nationwide to ask students of all ages, who are your two statues that represent your state? And you would be surprised how many people in the state of Florida don't know who those two statues are. Certainly we know that now one of them would be Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune. But back in 1864, there was legislation that was passed in Congress that said, hey, wouldn't it be nice to use the old house chambers, the statuary hall that we know of, just to the, when you walk in the door, just to the left of the rotunda, wouldn't that be nice if there were statues that represented some of the greatest Americans in the country? How about two from each state? And so the states across the nation began to place statues in Statuary Hall. There are 9 other women in Statuary Hall. There are, all the statues have been placed. The final statue was placed by the state of New Mexico in 2005. But a few years before that, in 2000, there were some states that said, hey, you know what? We want to change our statue. And so that was led by, I believe, California, and they said, we'd like to have President Reagan represent us. And so there was some movement, and in 2014, Congress passed some rules and regulations that allowed the replacement of statues. And so there are a lot of people will say, well, wait a minute, I've seen Martin Luther King, I've seen Rosa Parks in National Statuary Hall. There are other Black Americans in Statuary Hall, because you'll hear a lot of us saying we are so excited that the state of Florida has provided such leadership in terms of unification and embracing diversity that Mary McLeod Bethune will be the first Black American, first African American male or female to go in the U.S. Capitol National Statuary Hall. The other African Americans are represented by the states, their national monuments and statues. So as an example, Rosa Parks was placed in National Statuary Hall in 2013 to represent all states in the nation. And so that's just a little bit of background on the U.S. Capitol. Now here's a diagram of the U.S. Capitol. So you can see that in that center circle where the dome is in the Capitol, that's the room where there are 6 presidents there. They do represent states, but then just to the left is Statuary Hall, and that's where Dr. Mary McLeod will go from the Daytona State College News Journal Center to the U.S. Capitol National Statuary Hall. She needed to make a stop right here first in your building before she went on. And so this is really unprecedented. It's unprecedented for a statue that will stand in the U.S. Capitol for the next hundreds of years from now. It's unprecedented that that statue was created in Italy, brought to her hometown, Daytona Beach, Florida, and then journeyed on to Washington, D.C. And so these are just a little bit about the statues that are and were there in Statuary Hall. John Gorey is the other person that represents the state of Florida. A lot of people don't know this, but it's another great trivia question. Why is he in Statuary Hall? Well, he invented air conditioning. So we're all pretty darn glad for him, right? So we're saying, okay, we're gonna let him stay. But the other was a Confederate soldier. He was removed on September 4th. He is in storage. He will go to the Florida, the Museum of Florida History, and will be available upon request to be viewed. He was placed in 1922, I think, wasn't it, Bob? And so it was determined back just a little bit ago that there have been some greater Floridians since then. And so this is what's happening now. The statue will not take the place of John Gorey in Statuary Hall, but the statue will be unveiled in Statuary Hall. And it's our hope, right, Bob, that Mary McLeod will stay in that beautiful room. Now, in 1933, the Capitol got really, really full of statues. And so they started having to spread the statues out across many, many places in the U.S. Capitol. But we feel pretty confident, don't we, that the statue will stay in Statuary Hall. And so the great news is that the leadership in the state of Florida under Governor Rick Scott determined in 2016 that it was time to replace one of our 2 statues, the Confederate officer, with someone who represents all of Florida and someone who made great contributions in Florida. And so we made that decision as a state in 2016. And we looked at a variety of nominations. There were 3,500 plus nominations that were provided to the state of Florida. Many were duplicate nominations. Many, many, many people nominated Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune to be considered as one of the greatest Floridians in our state. There were 130 names were determined to be eligible, and Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune received an overwhelming number of votes to be chosen, far more than even the second place or third place nominee. She received 1,233 votes. And so that first occurred, and then the process occurred for the state of Florida to determine who would actually sculpt the statue. So there were 1,600 applicants to sculpt the statue, which is really interesting that these artists said they would like to provide the sculpture for the state of Florida, even though they had no idea who they would be sculpting. So, you know, you think about the talent that it took Milda to create this beautiful marble statue, but think about the fact that she was chosen before she even knew who she would carve, right? So that's just really interesting to me. And so she was chosen, and then on March 19th, 2018, the state of Florida passed into legislation and made the legislation signed into law that Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune would represent all of us. And she has real ties to Daytona State College, as Tom has shared on a number of occasions, and really was instrumental in Daytona State College existing here in our community, along with Bethune-Cookman University. And so as we progress, I don't want to get into too much detail, but I will tell you that Bob Lloyd and I have been buried in the detail, right, of the process. This is no easy process, and we are in our fourth year of this process, partly because of COVID, of course, right, because we've had some delays. The silver lining of that, and I guess we all draw on silver linings for anything that sets us back, right? If we live a very positive life, the silver lining is the statue is here. And that would have never been possible, right? We would not have had because the pandemic forced the Capitol to, of course, like all businesses and places, right? There was no broad access. And so because there was no broad access, we had this delay. And because of COVID, there was delay in Milda going back and forth from Fort Lauderdale to Pietra Santa. So the sculpting took a little bit longer. So that led us to this beautiful opportunity to say, you know, as long as we can raise the money, because we know, right, Chris, there's a lot of money and a lot of logistics involved in bringing the statue here. We said, as long as we can raise the money, let's do it. So we all voted 100%, right? Bob, our board, the statuary fund said, yeah, let's do it. So we're making history with Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune, and it's really significant. I mean, it's always significant, right, that a state says we want to replace a statue, because that's a huge decision for a state to say, who are the greatest two people in our history? So every state in the nation has had to say that to, you know, and had to reflect on that and evaluate their decisions or analyze, you know, are we represented by the people we should be represented by? And so it's just beautiful that the state of Florida has the very first African American going into the state collection. And that's a first in our country, and it's a very significant. She is also the first sculpture created by a Hispanic artist. Again, another first, and that's beautiful. She's the first and only statue that will be in a cap and gown, which speaks to all of your passion for education. That's a beautiful thing. And of course, for all of us, beautiful thing it is that she is the one and only statue of a woman or a person from Daytona Beach, Florida, right? I mean, that's pretty darn cool if you think about it. So I just think that's beautiful, all of those firsts. And so just a little bit about Milda Comas. If you'd like to meet her, come back here right in this room for some coffee and join our fellow Rotarians here in Daytona Beach. They are hosting a coffee with Milda on the morning of Monday, November 15th. So if the spirit moves you to come, she'd love to meet you, and she's a beautiful soul inside and out. Bob and I had the luxury of going to Pietra Santa, Italy, with Milda to see the unveiling there, which I'll talk a little bit about. But Milda has studied all over the world, and the most beautiful thing she'll say is she said a lot of things in speeches that I really appreciated, and she's just a beautiful soul. And she said she has worked her entire life for this moment. She has studied her entire life sculpting and perfecting the art of sculpting in marble and creating beautiful bronze statues just for this moment. And so just a little bit more about some of the background. In 2018, we had the Bethune-Cookman University told the legislature that if you support the nomination of Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune, we will raise the money. And so they had stepped up initially and said, we'll raise the money. But it was a unanimous board vote at a trustee meeting of Bethune-Cookman University. When I served as a trustee, the motion was put forward to start a separate 501c3 organization so that it could be very inclusive of the entire community. And so that's how the Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune Statuary Fund organization came to fruition. And it was initially led by Bob. So it was great, Bob. Thank you. And thanks for this opportunity. he passed the baton to me, and I'm trying not to drop him. So we started out saying, okay, we need $400,000 to create this statute. That was our mission, right? To create the statute, pay for it, and get the statute to Washington, D.C. Little did we know that there were a lot of logistics in that statement I just said, right? In terms of the shipping, installation, rigging, all of that. The neat thing about our board was that we enthusiastically expanded our mission on many occasions. One was to create a bronze statue, another original commissioned by Nelda Palmos to go in the beautiful riverfront that's been the park right up the street from here. So we have some other initiatives. Another initiative was a K-12 and documentary initiative. So in total, our mission went from $400,000 to $800,000. And I can tell you that we're at what, 700? Our board meeting's tomorrow, where Bob's colleague Danielle Merritt will report on the numbers, but I think it's around 750, isn't it? So a couple of our other project opportunities. We brought five Bethune-Cookman University recent graduates with us to Pietro Santo. We sponsored them to join us in the blessing and unveiling in Pietro Santo, Italy, a traditional ceremony that always takes place before a statue leaves. This has been a real opportunity for us in our community. We have about 1,000 people a week come between the private and public events. 5,000 eighth graders are coming to see the statue. So that's just a beautiful commitment from Volusia Public Schools. Father Lopez has a program that they're planning. Flagler School System has a program that we're planning. The theater department, the drama department, you were both involved in, right? As a gig back there, I saw him singing on Sunday. So I can't wait to hear you both again today. That was just a beautiful program that brought people in. It's just a beautiful program and celebrate the statue and celebrate Mary McLeod's life, achievements, and legacy. And so, yeah, we're working on the bronze unveiling. We have asked we've asked our congressional delegation for February 2nd, the beginning of Black History Month, to unveil the statue in D.C. And I think we're thinking of February 22nd, right? There's something about those twos that we like, right? Well, February 22nd will be the bronze unveiling. And then we hope to premiere the documentary and roll out the K-12 formal curriculum next year and premiere the documentary. And I'd love to see it premiere like simultaneously here in your theater and in the U.S. Capitol Visitor Center and the Cookman University Performing Arts Center. I'd love to see us do something along those lines in July of next year. So we talked a little bit about the co-host. That was really led by President Lovaso and Bob to get a lot of different stakeholders involved. So we have the Cookman University, Daytona State College, Volusia County, the City of Daytona Beach, Volusia County Schools, DME, who created the graphics, Halifax Health, who helped with all the content. So there were just a lot of players involved. Florida Blue came forward and donated $50,000 to really the rigging and installation and the logistics of all of this happening, along with the unveiling. And I mentioned again that we have two statues coming. I just want to go back to real briefly. I mentioned the 10 steps the architect of the Capitol requires of a statue replacement. So the interesting thing is this statue started as a 1-foot model in Milda's studio in Fort Lauderdale. Then it went to a 2-foot clay maquette. Then it went to a 4-foot clay maquette. And every single one of those steps had to be approved by our architect of the Capitol, the people that are in charge of the U.S. Capitol. And you could imagine that's no easy task to go through that approval process. There's a lot of bureaucracy involved in that. Everything has to be documented. All the measurements, all the weights, everything has to be completely documented. So step by step by step of this 10-step process. And we are now on step number 8, so we're almost done. But it started with the approval of each size of that clay maquette. And that clay maquette is what you use to create a plaster mold, which is what you use to create the marble and the bronze statue. So the bronze statue that we'll have in Daytona Beach is not a replica. It is an original. So it's an original piece of art, which makes it outstanding. So here are a couple of pictures I thought you'd enjoy. That's Nilda in the Trietti studio, creating the marble maquette, excuse me, the clay maquette. That's her working on that. So you can kind of see the smaller maquette on the stool and then the larger maquette. You can see in one of the pictures, but she has a cap and gown there, so she was studying that. Milda did a tremendous amount of research at the National Archives, and one of the things that she says so beautifully is, when I heard Mary McLaughlin's voice, I really fell in love with her. She said, as I listened to her, I realized how kind she was and how determined she was. And so, mentioned those already, mentioned a little bit about Pietra Santa Emily, known as the marble capital of the world. This is the marble that originally that statue came from. And so I just think that's really interesting to look at this 11 and a half ton block of marble and know that this marble statue that you're watching came from that exact block, and that exact block came from Michelangelo's cave. So it was the last largest, it was the last large block quarried from his cave before they closed the cave. So there was no more excavation going, taking place in that cave, or on that cave, I should say, on that cave, except for very small pieces. So it started with David and it ended with Dr. Mary McLaughlin. And then just a little bit about the bronze statue. This really was championed by Bob. I mean, he thought of this idea, brought it to our board, and we unanimously said, yes, let's raise another $150,000. And so even though our community has this beautiful opportunity to see the marble statue while it's here at the News Journal Center, we will also have the opportunity to continue to teach from Mary McLeod-Bethune's legacy and life achievements here in our own community with that bronze statue that will be unveiled on February 22nd next year. I mentioned again about the curriculum and the documentary. And right now, those eighth graders that come in the building, you know, you can talk to, you know, Chris or Carolyn, or, and you'll see, if you ever get a chance to come while those students are here, it's really fun because they bring in a little study sheet and they have all these questions that they have to ask. So you'll see a group sitting here on the floor talking to each other about what they're trying to figure out is the real meaning behind some of the symbolism in the statue, and they're reflecting on their thoughts of what it means. And I mean, that whole thing is happening really because of you, because you said this is worthy of contemplating going through the task of determining how we can get the statue in and how we can keep the statue safe. And I can't say enough about your team. I see Louis Mercer in the back there, and I want to thank you so much, because we met early on out of my trepidation about how do we keep this statue safe, right? And Louis arranged for us to meet with the Daytona Beach Police, the Volusia County Sheriff's Department. Your team has been amazing. Thank you so much. And then, of course, we feel really good about this environment because it's such a special room, it's such a special place, and it's academic, and so it's just, it just, you know, it tells you when you walk in here that this is about learning and expanding your own self, and Mary McLaughlin would love that. Just a couple things that I want to point out on the statue. As you start to look at the statue and start to read the storyboards and the wall, the columns and the window claims, you'll see that Milda took a lot of time in creating the statue to incorporate the symbolism of Dr. Mary McLeod-Bethune. And they're really special symbols. You can learn so much from the statue itself. And one of the things that she preached, when you read her last will and testament, which is the document that made me want to study Dr. Mary McLeod-Bethune. I mean, I think anybody who writes a document that's like the Ten Commandments, you know, that lives in perpetuity. I mean, I don't think I've ever written the document that will live in perpetuity, but she did. She wrote her last will and testament, and if you haven't read it, you need to Google it. You need to go to our website or Bethune-Cookman University's website and read that document. But one of the things that Dr. Bethune had accomplished in her life, she had been chosen as one of the founding representatives to the United Nations for the United States. She was the only black woman in that room. It was held in Europe, and she was in Switzerland, and she went to a rose garden before the statue, before the conference began, and she saw this beautiful multicolored rose garden. And it had in that garden a very deep black burgundy rose. And she said, you know, this is God's diversity right here. This represents all of the world.
these roses are thriving together just like humanity should. And so she came back and began to refer to her students as black roses. And that symbolism is shown in this black marble rose on the statue. And just a couple other of the details, the elements of the statue. You'll notice that her cap and gown is open and she's wearing dress shoes. Dr. Mary McLeod knew that first impressions mattered. And she made a wonderful first impression when she spoke articulately, appropriately, kindly, yet firmly, and always dressed very well. And as you'll see if you watch the 10-minute video that was produced by Wesh TV, which is really well done, she'll say, "I love to swagger." President Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt always knew I love to swagger a king. It's just beautiful. She said, like, I might want to swagger a king one day, too. You know, that's what makes you think that, right? And so there are just a few other things. Milda gave our board, right, Bob, this was like such a thrill to me, that she gave our board this beautiful opportunity to choose what should be on the spines of the books on the statue. And she gave our statuary board the opportunity to think about what would be best in terms of the quote that's on the front of the pedestal that will stand in the U.S. Capitol. And so it didn't take our board long to say, we really should have those different tenets from her last will and testament on the spine of those books. And so if you look closely at the statue, you'll see that it says, I mean, love, hope, faith, racial dignity, a thirst for education. My favorite one was too long, so it couldn't go on there. But my favorite tenet of her last will and testament is, I leave you the desire to live harmoniously with one another. So I just love that. Amen, right, frankly. Yeah, so on the top of the book it says, I leave you, because that's how she started each paragraph of her last will and testament. I told you a little bit about the pedestal. There were some requirements from the architect of the Capitol on how that is created. Of course, we need to proudly state that this statue does represent the state of Florida, so that's a part of that. I wanted to share with you just a couple photos from the blessing of Pietra Santa, because that's the first time any of us saw the pedestal and the marble statue, so it's a beautiful event. The mayor of Pietra Santa, Sindaco Alberto Stefano Giovanelli. Is that a beautiful name? That he really wanted our mayor there. So I had to appeal to Mayor Henry. I said, I hope you can go. I hope the city will send you, because it's very important to the mayor in Pietra Santa that we show them the respect of being grateful for this amazing marble that came out of the Carrara Marble Mountains that are at that Pietra Santa sits at the base of. And so a few other moments in time that, I don't know why my PowerPoint switched to photos, so that's odd to me, excuse me for that, but those were a few others. And then just another shout out to all of you. I just needed to say this again and again, thank you, thank you, thank you, because without your vision and leadership and your willingness to take a risk, and there were, you know, Chris and I know why people are doing this, because we were, you know, 6,000 pounds, okay, can we just, does this floor hold it, right? But he had a whole team of engineers here for all of you to make sure we could safeguard your building, and Lou was making sure that, you know, we could safely house the statue in a reverent way. We did look at a few other places. You know, the Ocean Center was very excited about being considered, but just didn't have the same feel as your Performing Arts Center, that's for sure. And so this was the event that was held on October 11th. The unveiling took place here, for about, we had about 170 people, and then we used the auditorium for overflow, so it worked out beautifully that we had that beautiful unveiling here. And then now, just so you know, and really honestly, we would so appreciate your leadership in this way, if you could spread the word, right, that the statue is able to be viewed 7 days a week. You have opened your building up 7 days a week from 10 to 4. That was huge on your part. I, you know, remember sort of quietly saying that to President Lavasso, we'd really like to have it open on Saturday and Sunday. Because I know that was a stretch for all of you. You have staff and an air conditioning, heat and electric. You have all of these expenses that that you're providing for us to be able to give the public this opportunity. And I really can't say thank you enough. But the way people come to see the statue is we try to do it 50 at a time. Why? Because we want people to have this beautiful experience when they come in. We also know that it might be beneficial for some people to avoid 200 eighth graders if they want. And we've had people come in and cry. We've had people come in and pray. We've had people come in and take really special family photos. And so we can't do that in huge crowds. So we have 50 at a time, on the hour, every hour. And so just thank you so much for all that you have done to make this moment happen.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. It was a wonderful overview of the journey that has got us to where we are today. And with that, I'm going to ask Jaslyn to come on up.
Good afternoon, everyone. The first reading I will be reading today is an interview from Charles Johnson from 1940. In her own words, "My mother said when I was born, I was entirely different from the rest. In the ordinary things the children engaged in, I wouldn't. My taste for food was different. I would just look at it and not even eat it. I had my own ideas even about that. My father was a McLeod and my mother was a McIntosh. There were 17 full brothers and sisters, and it took my mother's spirit to build our home. Father and my brothers got the logs that built the cabin where I was born. Some of my older brothers and sisters belong to slave masters. My oldest brother and my oldest sister heard tell when freedom came. They did not know they were free until called together a few days after the emancipation. I have a missionary spirit, the spirit of doing things for others. Anyone sick in the community, I would ask my mother to make them soup. If any child had no shoes, I wanted to share my shoes. She would have to watch me to keep from giving away things that just weren't mine. My mother, she was quite proud of it. She felt, here comes one of the children who is going to do something in their life. My mother, she kept rather close contact with the people she served as with the slave. She continued to cook for her master. On one occasion, my mother went over to do some special work for this family, and I was with her. I went out into what they called their playhouse, where the children did their studying. They had pencils, slates, magazines, and books. I picked up one of the books, and one of the girls said to me, you can't read that. Put that down, and I will show you some picture books over here. When she said that to me, you can't read that, just put that down, it did something to my pride and to my heart that made me feel someday I would read just as she was reading. I went away there determined to learn how to read and that someday I would master for myself just what they were getting, and it was that aim is what I followed. Thank you."
Gabriel. Gabriel is a familiar face that we've seen in many different venues, Shades of Blue being one. Good to see you.
Okay, that's not going to be much. I can reject. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. This is from Separate but Equal, Closed Doors, 1936, in her own words. Frequently, from some fair-minded speaker who wishes his platform utterances to fall on pleased ears, comes this expression: do not continually emphasize the fact that you are a Negro. Forget that. And quite as frequently, there is a desire to hurl back this challenge. You be a Negro for just one short 24 hours and see what your reaction will be. 1,000 times during those 24 hours, without a single word being said, he would be reminded and would realize unmistakably that he is a Negro. It is notorious that the Negro is deprived of civil rights in public areas. The cultural advantages of the concert, lectures, and public discussions are closed to him. In railroad travel, the Negro is segregated and made to ride in a filthy, dingy, unsanitary car. At the railroad station, there is a toilet facility marked color. The Negro must go to a separate church, even though he claims to be of the same denomination as some whites. He is not allowed to sing in unison with the white man the grand old hymns of Calvin, the Wesleys, the triumphant songs of Christ and eternal glory. When at last he is called to his final resting place on earth, even his ashes are not allowed to mingle with those of his white brother, but are borne away to some remote place where the white man is not even reminded that this Negro ever lived. Judging from all that has preceded the Negro in death, it looks as if he has been prepared for a heaven separate from the one to which the white man feels he alone is fit to inhabit. Thus, in death and for eternity, as in life, the white man would see the Negro segregated.
Oh, Jasmine.
Just one more.
Absolutely.
All right. This final piece is from a spiritual autobiography from 1946, and her own words. I can remember when I longed to know the inner voice of God and searched my mind for an answer to its meaning. It came about in the late hours of those nights when I listened to my mother. She took her lonely vigils when she thought everyone in the house was asleep. There she was in the dark on her knees. I knew the form of kneeling in the moonlight which poured in upon her. She would ask God for faith, for strength, for love, for forgiveness, for knowledge, for food and clothing, not for herself, but for her children and for all of the poor children. I gained faith in her when I saw these things she prayed for come to pass. And my mother's thank you, Father, made me realize early in life that all good things must come from God. And it was this affirmation of God that took me from the cotton fields to the little mission school to Scotia College to Moody Bible Institute and finally the planning of Bethune-Cookman College, the real child of my desire. I think now of my imperfections. I think of the four standards that we have as our guide here. Honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. I cannot help but express from my heart the feeling of how sure I've been of the perfection of these standards in my own life. I think of my first son, my only child, and how I had to leave him in the care of others as I tramped all over America looking for nickels, dimes, dollars, and quarters that I might build an institution that not only my son, but thousands of others might come. I had to neglect him. I could not give him the care and the guidance that a tender mother needed to give a child. He often looked in my face and said, "Mother, the school comes first and I come second." Now, when I recognize all the defects in his life as I have studied myself, I have analyzed these four standards we measure our lives by, and I feel that my first apology is to my son Albert, who is awaiting my return. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy and Jasmine and Gabriel, for sharing that with us. And that concludes our workshop.
I want to pass on our thanks to as a board. We talk a lot about our mission every time we meet is to change the lives of students and then their families for generations to come. And, boy, you can't think of a better role model for that. So, Nancy, Bob, students, everything you guys have done, just thanks so much. Thanks for sharing this.
I'll just make a comment before we conclude. Mary McLeod Bethune had a quote. She said, "Next to God, we are indebted to women, first for life itself, and then for making a life worth living." So, I think we are all indebted to the extraordinary leadership of Nancy Lohman. She makes it sound like I pitched it to her. No. She was the originator of the idea to get behind this when she was a trustee at Bethune-Cookman and made it happen, and you can see that passion and leadership, and we owe her a tremendous note of gratitude, and this community is better for having her here, and Dr. Bethune, her likeness would not be here without Nancy and all of her work.
Reconvene at 2:00 and feel free to mingle around at some time.